Hello again, and welcome back to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Chani Holzer.
And we're here today to talk about raising a resilient child. When we talk about this field of resilience, it has been actually talked about quite a bit, and especially more recent in the last few years, much more in the whole field of psychology. We talk about resilience, we're talking about how do I raise a kid who really bounces back from adversity, as opposed to a kid who becomes depressed or anxious and stuck. How do we raise a child who's going to be able to handle disappointments?
Not get depressed, not get stuck.
Not get sidetracked by them.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that we all suffer little disappointments every day throughout our lives.
I didn't get the parking spot in front of the store.
Yeah. This week it was it was the traffic. It seemed like every time I had to get someplace, you know, it just, the street was closed, the highway had an accident, whatever.
Right. And, you know, for kids, there can be so many disappointments. You know, the play date was canceled, grandma can't come to my birthday party, and I didn't get the best seat in the class. I got, my seat got moved, I got moved to the back, I hate the back.
Right. I mean, my best friend isn't in the class with me. You know, all, lots of disappointments that everybody has to deal with on a daily basis. Okay? Now, you know, we'd like our children not to have disappointments, but the reality is that they're a part of life.
And to not let them be disappointed or feel disappointed is actually counterproductive to helping them be resilient and bounce back.
Right. They need to, in a sense, exercise this muscle on little disappointments so that as they get older and deal with more stressors or larger disappointments, they can handle them also.
Right. It's a little disappointments that helps them flex their muscles so that later on they've got experience and they know what it is to deal with disappointment and to come back.
Right. So how do we help our children do this? Okay. How do we teach them resilience? And I think the first thing is don't try to protect them from it. Allow them to get disappointed.
Right, exactly. And then empathize. Empathize with how disappointing it is, how disappointed they are, how unfortunate.
Right. They're allowed to have these feelings. They don't have to be happy that the things didn't turn out their way. They can be disappointed that they lost the baseball game.
Right. I think empathy is important, though, as opposed to saying, it's not that bad. Or you shouldn't feel that way.
Right. A, they're entitled to feel how they feel. And it's important for you to be supportive.
Because if they feel understood, they recover faster.
Right. So the first thing is, don't discount their feelings. Don't minimize the situation. Recognize the situation. And yet empower them to get past it either way.
Right. If you resist the urge to rescue your child, oh, no, let me save them. Instead, let the child feel the letdown. And she'll discover that she can handle it.
Right.
And the empathy in that is critical.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing the feelings to be there.
When they do get disappointed, they feel like they have less control over their lives. Okay? So give them decisions to make. Give them more of a sense of control. That's really an empowering response. Okay? And not something we might naturally think of. Okay, but even just letting them choose which pizza shop we're going to, you know, exercising some control, it gives them a feeling of greater strength, okay, when they're feeling really down.
Right, and choice is the key so that they feel that they have control over something. Give them some choice that they can, you know, make.
Right. And then also, you can help children manage disappointment better by sort of planning ahead with realistic goals and realistic expectations. Okay? You know, if they're in the league with 8 teams, okay, and one of the teams, you know, they're in the, 12, 13-year-old, you know, junior high school, whatever, basketball league, and one of the other teams has a kid who's 6'2", and hasn't lost yet, the idea, the expectation that they're going to win the championship may not be overly realistic,
right.
You know, even if their team's pretty good.
And if their expectations are more realistic, then they can cope better with the angst afterwards, with the disappointment of it all afterwards, when perhaps their team won't be in the championship playoffs.
Right. I mean, even in professional ball, for a lot of teams, making the playoffs is an accomplishment and a goal, even though they know they're not winning the championship this year. But we made the playoffs. Okay? So we hit a certain level of proficiency. We can't always win everything, but we can appreciate what we focusing on what we can accomplish instead of focusing on the disappointments.
Right, and making it much more realistic. And I think teaching your child to bounce back will help them become more independent and spare some tantrums.
What else can we do in terms of, you know, talking to our kids about things that go on? It's interesting. One of the foremost leaders in this field of resilience is Dr. Martin Seligman. And, you know, he talks about, he's got a great book called The Optimistic Child that I really recommend reading for all parents. And he talks about some of the problems that have come out of the whole field of self-esteem and really trying to push self-esteem for all children in America that have been going on for the past half century or so. And really since the 1960s or so, the idea of telling every child that they're wonderful and special and good, which has a lot of problems because, you know, if everyone's special, then what makes anyone special? And, you know, it's self-esteem has become just a sort of, you know, everybody, you know, just telling every kid they should just feel good about themselves.
It's kind of empty and vacuous past a point.
Right. It doesn't really seem very sincere. There's not much to hang on to. Okay? Even though you're being left back and you flunked out of class, you're special and you should feel good about yourself.
Right. It's like, you know, what exactly do I have to feel special and good about? Please tell me.
And so that one of the things he talks about is that when you do praise children, right, you want to make the praise, you know, you want to emphasize, you know, number one, the variables that children can control. Okay, so it's much more effective to emphasize the effort they put in, right, than their natural abilities. Okay, if a child goes to team practices and really works on, you know, his, on the basketball team to improve his shot or improve his dribbling, and you praise that, they feel that's very meaningful because it's something they really put into it. Okay, but you know, if my kid is naturally gifted in math, okay, and I praise him just for, you know, getting 90s on his math test.
Or being smart.
Right, being smart, which, you know, even though he didn't do any studying and barely did any homework, that's not nearly as meaningful. If I praise his effort though, right, if I talk about all the work they put into that term paper, you know, that's a very meaningful praise because it's praising something that's in their control that they can recognize that they did.
Right. It's also highlighting effort, which is really what you need in order to get through most of life. It's putting the work in. So you're highlighting a lifelong necessary tool.
Right. So when you do praise children, one is praise the effort, not the ability. Okay, that's going to be much more effective in terms of having a real impact on your child and their resilience and how they feel about themselves, because that's going to be very meaningful. The other things are, you know, praise should be really sincere. Okay, kids don't take the praise at face value unless you're talking about really young children. But kids already in even by first, second grade,
so they say things like, "Oh, you're just saying that because you're my mother."
Right.
They know. They smell it out right away.
Right. So that if you're going to praise, you have to find something to praise that really is sincere and meaningful. Okay, you know, I'm really impressed on, you know, how much you, you know, you studied for your test, or how much you practiced, fielding the ground balls, you know, to get to become a better fielder. Or I'm impressed at how much time you spent, you know, learning or doing or whatever it was.
Right, an insincere praise would be, you know, watching a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old try to build a rocket out of Lego. And the 9-year-old is really good at this, much better than a 6-year-old, and their rocket actually looks like a rocket. So if you tell a 6-year-old whose thing looks like a jumble and is frustrated and upset, oh no, you're a really good rocket builder. You're an excellent rocket builder. That's not true.
Right.
It's insincere. And it doesn't address what's really going on. Well, you know, when your sister was 6 years old, she really couldn't build rockets either, and that it's, you know, may not be, you know, appropriate for you to be able to build the perfect rocket at six, but you really tried. How good that is that you tried.
Right, and if you keep trying and doing, I know that you're going to get really good at this.
Right, and maybe, you know, we could practice building rockets together and you can get better at it.
Right. And the other thing, it should be specific. Just praising, you know, kids that, you know, you're so special because you're in fifth grade, you know, isn't nearly as meaningful as telling a child that, you know, this specific thing that you did is something you should be very proud of. And so the ability to really focus on, you know, specific accomplishments and specific, you know, things that the child did and make them feel special about not just being, okay, not just, you know, we applaud ourselves or make loving yourself a habit, okay, but saying, you know, I'm really proud of you because you did a really good job, you know, pitching that game, okay? Or I'm really proud of you because you worked really hard on your science fair project. That's something that a child can really connect to.
Internalize.
Right. Feel that you're really sincere and it means something. So, you know, when we praise children, we want to do it in a way that really helps them feel good about themselves in a meaningful way that they can hold on to, and not something that they're just gonna, you know, not really gonna let go of right away because you're just saying that you're my mother, you have to say that.
And they can really feel good about something that they've actually accomplished, which is something that they ultimately internalize, and then the belief system is, I can do things. I did this and this and that, and maybe I can do the next thing too.
So in resilience, there are, you know, many factors that are involved. How I think about things, how I analyze situations, the ability to feel that I can make a difference and I can be effective, my feeling, how I feel about my relationship with other people, how much I care about others, but one of the key things is really optimism. Okay. And, you know, that's in Dr. Seligman's book on the optimistic child. He talks a lot about optimism.
I just want to interject. I think the first person who I experienced in my life as an optimist was my father. My father is a Holocaust survivor who's, God willing, going to be 82 years old this year. And when I was a very small child, he took me on a walk when I was, you know, on a Shabbos afternoon to tell me his story. And I don't remember the details of his story from that particular event, from that walk, but what I do remember, and I will never forget, is what he said got him through everything that he went through. And the Holocaust started for him September 1st, 1939, because he's from Krakow, Poland. And he said, what got me through was I always thought, it's gotta get better. He was the first optimist. He's the ultimate optimist because his life wasn't easy and it wasn't pretty and he really did suffer.
And I would dare say that one of the key ingredients for many survivors was some sense of optimism and this belief that things have to get better. Because if you didn't have something to live for, it would be very hard to survive. And so, you know, but optimism in general it makes people resilient against getting pessimistic and depressed. People who are optimistic tend to live healthier, live longer, have less heart disease. They're much less depression.
They're much more connected to people.
So optimism overall is makes a big difference in our lives. And what it really is a belief that things will turn out well. Okay, it's the expectations that good things are going to come your way and that you have some ability to control the direction of your life. Even when bad things happen, right, then the belief that, whatever caused the problem can change, can get better, it's not going to be forever. Okay, pessimistic thinking, right? Dr. Sullivan talks about three aspects. Number one, kids who think pessimistically think in terms of permanent, meaning that it's always, they use that term of always.
Right. Okay? It's the all or nothing thinking.
Right. It's pervasive, okay? It's not just this, it's everything, okay? And it's, very personal. It's, I strike out in the game because I'm just a really bad baseball player. I never do well. I never win. Okay.
And I'm never gonna win.
Right. We always lose. Okay.
That always word is a big one.
Right. Because it's pervasive and it's permanent. Okay? It's not just I had a bad, that other pitcher was really good and therefore, I couldn't hit the ball. Boy, I've never seen a guy pitch so fast.
So it's not so personal. It's that there was someone else, there was another variable in there.
Right.
It wasn't only me, it was about the other, it was about the pitcher
and
too.
And it's not pervasive, it's not every time.
Right, they had a good pitcher today. Maybe
right.
Next time they won't have a good pitcher.
Right, and it's not permanent because other times I do hit. This time I couldn't hit the ball.
But it's an easy enough shift to make from it being personal, pervasive, and permanent. And showing that not always.
It's like when a kid starts, let's say, a new school. Right? And he comes home and he says, I just started here at school and nobody wants to ever be my friend. Again, this is, nobody wants to ever, so it's, ever is permanent. Nobody is pervasive, right? And it's all about me. They don't want to be my friend. As opposed to a kid who comes home and says, it was the first day of school. It's really hard to make new friends. Okay, so it's not just about me. It's just hard in general to make new friends. It's not forever. It's just, it takes time.
It's right now is not so comfortable.
Right. And, it's not that nobody wants it. It's not nobody. It's just, it hasn't happened yet. I'm sure there are people who are going to be my friend, but didn't happen the first day. Okay, so how children interpret their environment, how they explain and they think about what goes on in their lives makes a huge difference in how resilient they're going to be, how they're going to bounce back. Because if they take everything in a pessimistic way, if everything is negative and it's all about, I'm no good, it's never good, nothing's ever good, okay, then it's going to be very hard for them to bounce back. Whereas if they see things in a much more positive way, right? Or, if the explanation is not as negative, okay? It's not always.
And we really can help our children with that. We can really help them with events as they come up, seeing them as, no, this isn't always. No, it's not going to be forever. And not necessarily all about you. Being able to help them shift that is really very doable. And to practice, I believe that it takes a lot of practice doing it over and over again and modeling that for them in the way you live your life and in the way you make your decisions and the way you experience things.
Right. Now, the flip side is also very important because optimistic kids, right, explain positive good events, right, in more permanent and, and pervasive ways. So, I won the spelling bee because, I'm a hard worker and I studied hard, as opposed to a pessimistic kid might say, well, the only reason I won is because, I practiced hard this time. Okay, so what pessimist kids do is they take the good events and make those temporary, whereas the optimistic kids take the good stuff and make that permanent.
Right. I got an A on the paper today in college, but the professor must have been having an off day, or must have not read it completely. They gave me an A. It's not being able to embrace the good that's happening to them either.
An optimistic, positive kid is going to say, I did well because I'm smart, okay? A kid who's less so is going to say, well, I'm smart at math, so I'm able to do good in that, okay? Less pervasive, more specific. So what we want to really help our kids do is interpret things, the negative things, the bad things that they have to deal with, the disappointments, should be more specific and limited, okay, and more, temporary. And the good things should have more permanence and more pervasiveness.
More personal. They should be able to own it.
Right. Okay. So there are really different ways we can really help our kids. But once we recognize this, there are lots of things we can do in terms of understanding how our kid narrates their world, how they understand their world.
Like the messages that they send themselves, and we all send messages to ourselves all the time.
And practicing with them. If you're sitting at the dinner table and talking about what happened that day, we can really practice with them how they can, how they can say things differently. And by changing your words, you change their thoughts. You can gradually change the way they think. Mm-hmm. And so the simplest way to approach this is really to help your child. If we understand and recognize this, that this is really important. And this is something that goes, right back to the Chumash, of course. Rashi talks about when Yaakov gives the bracha, the blessing to his children, it doesn't start off with a blessing. He gives Reuven a really hard time, and then by Shimon and Levi, right, he says, Arur apam kiaz. He curses, but what does he do? He curses their anger. He doesn't curse them personally, right? Kiaz, he curses their anger because it's quick, right? And it's harsh. Okay, but he's talking about their anger. It's not about them personally. It's not personal. It's behavioral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's not permanent. It's about the specific incidents. Okay, and it's not like this is it can't be helped. It's really what he says is Achal kein bi Yaakov afifitzein bi Israel. I'm going to spread this harshness, this intensity, right, and spread it out among the people so it gets moderated and turns into a good thing. Okay, so that we're right from the get-go. The Torah teaches us you don't criticize personally, you criticize a behavior. Okay, so that when we talk to our children about their behavior, we want to do this same thing. We want to make sure when we have to reprimand them, that we do it, we talk behaviorally, specifically, temporary. Okay? That it's not, you're a lazy good for nothing. Okay? And you never do anything right. It's, when you don't study for your tests, you don't get a good mark.
Well, it's also teaching them cause and effect, which I think is very important. You study for the test and you do well. Oh, okay, that's the connection between studying and doing well. You don't study and you don't do well. Okay, that's also teaching them the connection between lack of effort and outcome.
There is a large role that we can play that really makes a difference. And the other side is that when things do go bad for our kids,
like, because even if they do put in effort, sometimes that was going to be a test that was just so hard, the teacher really made it tricky, made it more challenging than usual, they may not do well. and they really did try. So what do you do then?
Right. So, you know, one of the things is, and, you know, you can find a lot of this stuff is actually on the, there's a site from the company that makes the Goldfish crackers.
Pepperidge Farm?
Yeah, I think so. Called Fishful Thinking.
Is that a .com or a .org?
.com, I believe. And they've really incorporated a lot of these ideas from Dr. Solomon's group. And so they have a variety of things you can do that I suggest you check out. One of them is the silver lining game. And it's really, it's taking a negative event, right? And so you could say, I don't like the fact that I got a very poor grade on the test. But one thing I did get right, or I did well on the test, you know, or I can be proud of, is
that one specific thing. Like, well, I really did study. I may not have done well, but I really put in a lot of effort.
Right. Or there was one question that most people got wrong, and I got it right. And this part I really understood well.
Well, like when the big game gets rained out. Okay, the big game got rained out. It was very disappointing. You know what? We got to go home and spend time together because we had nothing else planned. And we had hot chocolate and donuts.
Even, you know, we played the game and I didn't score any runs and I stuck up. But one thing I can be proud of is I made a really good catch in the outfield. Okay? So even though our team lost and I'm disappointed, it's not all bad.
That's the silver lining inside the cloud.
And it's important that we recognize that even when it's cloud, it's never all bad. That if, you know, we have to be optimistic and see that things aren't all bad, there's always some good that we can focus on. And when we're able to help our children do this, right, then, you know, their thinking changes, their outlook changes. It really is, you know, inoculates them from, you know, this sort of, because pessimistic negative thinking results in higher rates of depression, higher rates of, you know,
biological, physiological illnesses.
And this across the lifespan, because, you know, studies have shown that optimistic men, you know, who are, you know, 64 and above have a 50% lower risk of cardiovascular death when, you know, compared to those who are the least optimistic or pessimistic. And, you know, higher optimism at every age, you know, goes along with better health, more physical activity, better education, better relationships. These are a life skill that you can gift your children with.
Well, it's also a lifelong skill because you can be, no matter how resilient your child is right now, you can help them become more resilient tomorrow. And it's not all or nothing. You can be a little resilient, a lot resilient, resilient in some situations but not others. And we can all become more resilient tomorrow, much more so than we are today.
So we would like you to think about this, review it. You can, again, we mentioned Dr. Seligman's book, The Optimistic Child, which I think has a lot of excellent insights. And if you want the shorter version, you can go on to fishfulthinking.com and read up on some of these approaches and some of these games and interventions you could do with your children so that you can really help them become more resilient, to bounce back better, and to really, you know, feel better about themselves and lead happier lives.
Right, and I think, you know, to close, in order for children to reach their fullest potential and thrive no matter what life puts in their path, they need to know how to approach life with resilience.
Thank you for joining us today. This is Dr. Barry Holzer
and Hani Holzer
at Parent is a Verb. Please feel free to contact us with any questions or comments at Parent is a Verb, that's one word, Parent is a Verb at OURadio.org.